Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today marks a week since teachers in Oakland went on strike, calling for better pay, smaller classroom sizes, more counselors and nurses for students, and more oversight of charter schools. Teachers across the San Francisco Bay Area are expected to walk out in solidarity today. This is the latest in a wave of educator strikes that started last year when 20,000 teachers in West Virginia walked out. It was a 9-day walkout, and they won a raise. Just this month, they walked out again, successfully protesting a bill that would have allowed tax dollars to pay for private school tuition and establish charter schools for the very first time in that state. Earlier this year, teachers in Los Angeles went on strike. They also won a raise. They also got class size limits, a cap on charter schools, a promise to hire nurses for every school and more librarians, and reductions in standardized testing. We also saw strikes in Denver, and there's also talk about more strikes coming from other districts across California. Joining us to talk about these ongoing strikes and the state of public education are three guests. Teresa Harrington is a reporter covering education for EdSource, a nonprofit journalism website reporting on key education issues in California and beyond. And Teresa joins us in studio. Hi, Teresa. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having
me. Nice to have you. We're also joined by Miles Murray, an English and creative writing teacher at Oakland High School. Miles has been teaching for 11 years. This is his 8th year in the district. And Miles is joining us from the picket line. Hi, Miles. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for covering this story. It's a beautiful day out here.
Yeah, it is a beautiful day. You all have been picketing in the rain, so it's nice that it stopped raining for everybody. Although we definitely need the rain, but when you're striking, it's kind of hard. Alex Webster Guiney. Yeah, Alex Webster Guiney has been a special education teacher with the Oakland Unified School District for 4 years. She was also a teacher in New York City for 4 years. And Alex is also joining us from the picket line. Hi, Alex. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have both of you. I want to start off with you, Alex, because you told CNN that your family would be dipping into your savings because of the loss of pay from the strike. So teachers are not getting paid while on strike. And it's been a week so far, right?
Yeah, we're on day 6.
So can you talk about that? What are you hearing from teachers? How are you dealing with the fact that you haven't been paid for 6 days?
You know, it's really nerve-wracking, and I think everybody is feeling it, and kind of that's like the pressure on us, right? Like, the longer that we're out here, the longer that we keep doing this, the more pay that we lose. But you know, that's why we want this to be over as soon as possible so we can go back to work. But we're really strong. Spirits are super strong. Our school is so committed and unified, and it just feels like, yeah, it's a hardship, but like, we're all in this hardship together.
What would you add, Miles? And can you just talk about how difficult it is for teachers in Oakland to make ends meet? Again, starting salaries are about $46,500. The average salary is $63,000. And like San Francisco, housing is just astronomical in Oakland and the surrounding areas.
Absolutely. The numbers I have in front of me that a 1 month rent is over 60% of a starting teacher's salary. So we are getting support from our family, dipping into savings. Wow. Our union has a fund, a crisis fund that people can apply to get some money. But we are dedicated not only for our students now, but for our teachers and students and counselors and nurses and psychologists and speech pathologists in the future. We're hoping to win big, a fair contract now, so that people don't have to sacrifice like we're sacrificing in the future.
Oh, and one more story. CNN talked to a young teacher who shares a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom house with 4 other teachers. He said that he makes $46,500. He made that last year before taxes. A third of that, $950, goes toward rent. Another teacher who's been with the district for 27 years makes $82,000 and can stay because she lives in a rent-controlled 2-bedroom apartment with her husband and 2 children. So the teachers' union has demanded a 12% raise over the next 3 years. The district has offered 7%. Alex, where are those negotiations right now?
You know, I don't really know exactly. The last that I heard, the district had offered 8%, and with a one-time 2% bonus. But the 8%, I think, is over 4 years, and that bonus is only 1 year. So that's not sustainable for us. That would still put us below the rate of inflation for the past 3 years, which, you know, we've been working without a contract for 2. And our last contract, our last pay raise was in 2015. So we're not, that's definitely not keeping up with inflation and the cost of living here in the Bay Area.
Teresa, you cover education. You've been writing about the Oakland strike. So many of these issues, we've heard them from teachers across the country. Let's just specifically right now just talk about the pay, because we're losing teachers because they cannot make ends meet, especially in expensive places like the Bay Area.
Right. And you're seeing this in all districts around the Bay Area. The West Contra Costa District gave teachers a big raise, and they had to make major budget cuts in order to sustain that raise. Here in Oakland, of course, that didn't happen, and so that's why the strike is happening. But yes, they're losing about 1 in 5 teachers. Every day they have press conferences, and this morning they had a little boy on talking about how one of the, I think it was a 2nd or 3rd grade, lost a teacher in the middle of the year, and then the kids just had substitutes the rest of the year. And so that's not good for kids' education at all.
Can you talk about what goes on behind the scenes during the negotiations? Because LA, they got a raise. West Virginia got a raise. How are these decisions made? The difference between 5% and 7% is big. I mean, especially when you're making $50,000 and you are paying a couple grand a month in rent.
Right. And they, you know, they're spreading it out over, as she just said, 4 or 5 years. And so it's not like you're just getting the big lump sum all at once. And so the district did on Monday actually increase the offer to 8% over 4 years, which she just said, and then the 2% one-time bonus. But the 2% is just based on what you're making now. And then you eventually get up to the other 8%. And as she said, that's just not enough.
I read in the Chronicle that some teachers were angry because the negotiations were happening in public and they found out about it in the media rather than from union officials. Do you have any details on that, just how that works?
Well, the union has been trying to keep it quiet in terms of what's going on behind the scenes and saying that they didn't want to negotiate in the media. But then what happened was the district sent out a press release last night saying, hey, guess what? We offered them 8% on Monday. And then, of course, the union was forced to respond to that and say, hey, you know, we thought this was going to be kept confidential until we reached a settlement. So there is a little bit of back and forth trying to use the media to each other's advantage, I think.
In addition to struggling with the high cost of living in the Bay Area and other places across the country, teachers are also having to deal with very large classes and various problems that children bring to the classroom. I mean, we're learning and hearing so much more about this now. Just in Oakland, according to KION, 75% of students qualify for free or reduced lunch, which is an indicator of how many students come from low-income families. We also saw similar statistics in Los Angeles. Miles, can you talk about some of the other things, issues that teachers are dealing with inside the classroom?
Well, like you say, we're, many of our classes are overcrowded. Our students who need to go see counselors are very under-supported. We've got a ratio of students to academic counselors of 1 to 600.
Wow.
And then if the kid gets hurt, we've got 1 nurse for every roughly 1,700 kids. So we've got second language learners that need extra support. And I think this ties in nicely with the issue of charter schools. Now, charter schools are part of our negotiations. We're trying to get a moratorium on new charter schools. They are publicly funded, but privately managed. And they've got certain techniques to keep the highest need kids out of their campuses. So as the charter movement grows here, our traditionally public schools are left with a higher ratio to teach of kids with special needs, who are learning English, as we lose in this district over $57 million a year are just draining out to go to the charter. So that's another thing. One other demand that wasn't mentioned yet is school closures. We're also asking to have a moratorium on school closures. The district is trying to close down, I think it's 24 different schools, almost all of them located in the flatlands of Oakland, which are, of course, predominantly Latinx and Black students.
And what is the justification for shutting down these schools?
Well, they say that they're broke, and we say that they're lying.
Teresa?
We say that they're not being upfront with their numbers. They ended the year last year with a $30 million surplus. Then, lo and behold, at the beginning of this year, they had a $30 million deficit. They're moving numbers around like a magician. They got this. I'm looking at the budget here for materials and supplies. So a couple years ago, it was $8.7 million a year. Last year, it was $7.9 million a year. Excuse me, the year before. Then last year, it jumped up to $41 million a year all of a sudden in that little pool of money. Turns out they've only spent about $1 million of it. So, you know, the $30 million that they claim is in their in deficit. There, we found it for them right there, for starters.
So this is 24 schools that primarily serve African-American Latino students. Teresa, what can you tell us about this?
Okay, first of all, they actually have not identified the 24 schools, and they may not actually close 24 schools. Mm-hmm. This is an estimate that they came up with by looking at how many schools they have and how under-enrolled several of the campuses are. And they decided that if they combined all the schools with the enrollment that they have, they could actually afford to operate with 24 fewer schools. So they haven't actually identified them, but most of the under-enrolled schools are in the predominantly, as I say, Black and brown neighborhoods, yes.
And when you hear officials talk about this, how are they justifying the closure of these schools?
Because they're saying they have too many schools and not enough students.
Too many schools, not enough students. And do the numbers bear that out?
Well, if you look at this report that they did, you know, where they looked at the capacity of each school and the number of students, it does. But then a lot of people are saying, yeah, but they're not counting certain things like where you have to have pull-out classes or other things that you would need classroom space for. And so some people are afraid that if they do close these schools, the charter schools will move into them.
And what does the past tell us about that? Does a charter usually move in when a school closes?
That has happened in the past. And so that's why there is this fear, definitely.
Teresa Harrington is a reporter covering education in Northern California for EdSource. That's a nonprofit journalism website reporting on education issues. Miles Murray is an English and creative writing teacher at Oakland High School. He's been teaching for 11 years. This is his eighth year in the district. Alex Webster Guiney has been a special education teacher with the Oakland Unified School District for 4 years. She was also a teacher in New York City for 4 years. Miles and Alex are joining us from the picket line today. Teachers have been on strike for a week, and teachers across the San Francisco Bay Area are expected to walk out in solidarity today. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. If you're a teacher, what issues does your district face? How are these issues impacting you and your students? What do you think of the strikes we're seeing across the country? If your child attends a school in Oakland, what has your experience been like with low-paid teachers, big classes? This is just shocking. One counselor for every 600 students. Although we're seeing this across the country, one nurse for 1,700 kids. How does that affect your child? 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Miles and Alex, you were both talking about one nurse for 1,700 kids. Alex, this is a basic question, but what happens if a child gets sick or injured and there's just one nurse on staff? Or in the case of Los Angeles, nurses were traveling from school to school, and sometimes there was no nurse on staff.
Yeah, we have that here, too, our nurses part-time. And, I think in a lot of schools, it's kind of like, if the nurse isn't there, then guess who the nurse is? The teacher. You know, the teacher is the one with the Band-Aids and the ice pack and the EpiPen and the emergency numbers and all of the information about the insulin, and basically has to respond to those situations in the classroom. For us, we here at Oakland High School are lucky because we have a community partnership with EBACI, and they provide a RN to us for the times when our nurse is off campus. So we usually have coverage, but I know that's not the case across the district.
What would you add, Miles?
I've definitely given out a lot of Band-Aids and made tea for kids that are sick, and I've had kids waiting for weeks to talk to their counselor because the caseload is so big. They want to change their classes, or they have questions about their FAFSA or their college applications, and they're just waiting around for weeks before they can get that little note that says, okay, the counselor will see you now.
Do both of you also buy school supplies with your own money, Miles?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do all the time. It's part of the job.
Do you also bring food to class for kids who are hungry?
I do. There's often kids who are hungry, and, they can't really learn if they're hungry. And I know, most teachers have got a little stash of granola bars or peanut butter and graham crackers for those occasions.
Yeah, kids routinely stop by my class to get food even when they're not in my class. They will just come by and say, I'm hungry, what do you got?
And do these kids tell you that they didn't have breakfast at home? I mean, what are some of the stories you're hearing from these kids?
Yeah, there's a lot of kids that rely on their meals at school. And I'll tell you, one amazing part of this strike has been we took that into account, and with a partnership with Bread for Ed, we've managed to collect food and feed all the kids who decided with their parents' permission to not cross the picket line. So we've got pupusas and sandwiches and various other treats on the line that we're trying to make up for we're trying to provide that food for the kids that aren't in school.
Teresa, I think this is another huge part of the teacher strike story, is that so many students in this country are living in poverty. Their parents have a hard time making ends meet. They're on free or reduced lunches. Can you talk about that?
Yes, and in Oakland especially, they have a large percentage of these children, and that's why they have this motto, which is that they are full-service community schools, where they also have health clinics, they have dental clinics, they provide food to the kids, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They tried to cut the supper program, and there was a huge backlash because this was where kids were getting their dinner from. But one of the board members has actually brought up the question, can we really afford to be all things to all these kids, because they've got so many kids that aren't even reading at grade level. And he's saying, we need to focus on that. But the teachers are saying, yeah, but as he just said, if they're hungry, they're not going to be able to focus. If they've got trauma in their household at home, they're not going to be able to focus. There's homeless kids. There's foster kids. They've got a lot of issues and a lot of English learners, too. So they have extra, extra needy kids and not enough money.
And it speaks to another level of issues in this country: inequality, low wages, the fact that even in the wealthy Bay Area, for many people, it's hard to find a job that pays a living wage along with benefits. So this brings out so many social issues. in this country.
It does. And in Oakland, actually, the issue of segregation has come up because there are wealthy areas of the district where the parents can afford to raise money for the schools. This is coming up with libraries. A lot of schools don't have librarians and don't even have libraries. Some of them don't have current books in the libraries. But these in the schools in the wealthier areas, the parents can afford to raise money, hire a librarian, buy books. And in the less the lower income areas, they're just going without. They don't even have a librarian or a library.
Miles, at Oakland High School, do you have a librarian staffed with a library staffed with librarians?
No, we don't have a librarian at our school. And I'd like to add on to what we were saying before. Another fact that makes the whole issue just so heartbreaking and frustrating is that our administrators and our people who are working downtown are getting paid the highest amounts compared to the teachers out of the whole Bay Area, right? So we're talking about inequality. We're talking about teachers getting the least amount of pay, buying graham crackers to feed their kids. Meanwhile, you got the people downtown making $200,000-$300,000 a year. So it just adds fuel to the fire that it's just upside down situation.
Wow. We'll talk about administration in a minute. Alex, you're a special education teacher with a district. Do you work at a specific school or at districts, different schools?
No, I'm specific to Oakland High School.
Okay. I mean, it's shocking. I just, you know, every time we do these shows about teachers, when we were talking about the West Virginia strike, a lot of people in progressive areas said, well, yeah, West Virginia, it's run by Republicans. It's a poor state. Well, this is Oakland, right? Home of Uber, who's about to go public. They're about to go public, and they're going to create a number of millionaires overnight. This is the wealthy Bay Area, the California state of the resistance, fifth or sixth largest economy in the world. And Teresa, Oakland High is having these problems. I mean, when you really dig down and look at the finances and the budget cuts, I mean, Prop 13 is a big part of it, and we'll talk about that later. But what else is really happening here?
Well, it's basically, yeah, California underfunds its schools compared to other states. There are different figures out there, so it's hard to nail it down, but it's definitely in the bottom 10 nationwide. And as you said, it's the fifth largest economy. And so people are raising this question, saying, why here in California are we not giving more money to our students? And of course, they bring up prisons, which are very highly funded, and say we should divert the money that's going to the prisons to the kids. And so this is something that I think Governor Newsom is actually taking on and wanting to address. He's also addressing the charter school issue. He's also trying to find funding for preschool. So he is very focused on education, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
According to the Los Angeles Times, California per pupil spending is $12,000 a year, and per prisoner spending is $75,000 a year.
Yeah, so that pretty much shows you right there where the problem is. And then with Governor Brown, they did change the funding formula so that districts like Oakland with higher needs kids get more money. But one of the issues that the teachers are raising, which you've already heard, is that the money is not getting to the classrooms. It's staying downtown with the administration.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that? What have you found with administration, and what has changed over the years?
Well, for one thing, that over about 15 years they have, their enrollment has gone down. And so they built all these schools, and they don't have the same number of students now that they used to have. But over the last 5 years or so, the enrollment has remained fairly steady. And then they've created all these small schools, which take more administrators, both at this district level and at the school site level. And so now that's another reason that they're closing schools, is because they have so few students in these small schools that they think it costs too much for the overhead and all this administration. And downtown, as the teacher said, these administrators, there are some that make a lot of money, six figures definitely. And that's why with the new budget cuts that got postponed, the teacher strike actually closed down a school board meeting last night where they were going to vote on about $20.2 million in budget cuts. But the school board has directed the superintendent to focus the majority of those cuts in the central office. And so the majority of the cuts are slated to be there. But then what they're finding is that some of those administrators are actually doing things that are helping the students, like restorative justice program and a program for Asian and Pacific Islander student achievement and a foster youth case management. So there is a little bit of backlash against which administrators they're deciding to cut. And then they are still including $3 million in cuts across the board to schools.
Well, we'll continue to talk about those cuts after a quick break. And I just want to correct one thing I said. Uber was going to expand in Oakland, but they sold their building for $180 million in late 2017. So now they're back in San Francisco. But a lot of tech companies and a lot of people who make high wages are buying property and are able to rent apartments for $3,000 to $5,000, which makes it very hard for people like teachers and other workers who are making around $50,000 to afford housing.
Right. So they're getting pushed out into the suburbs, and some of them are having long commutes and even still having to have roommates out there.
Right. Teresa Harrington is a reporter covering education for EdSource, a nonprofit journalism website reporting on education issues in California and beyond. Miles Murray is an English and creative writing teacher at Oakland High School. He's been teaching for 11 years. This is his eighth year in the district. And Alex Webster Guiney has been a special ed teacher with the Oakland Unified School District for 4 years at Oakland High. And today we are talking about teacher strikes across the country. Today marks a week since teachers in Oakland went on strike. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will discuss the violent crackdown on the anti-government protests in Sudan. We will also talk about Michael Cohen's testimony before Congress. He was Donald Trump's former personal lawyer, accusing Trump of being a racist, a con man, and a cheat with a long history of tax and insurance fraud. Next week, we're putting shows together about the Ocean Film Festival, an amazing festival every year in San Francisco. We'll also speak with J.J. Mulligan Sepulveda about his book, No Human is Illegal, An Attorney on the Front Lines of the Immigration War. If you have a show idea for us or feedback, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are talking about the teacher strikes happening across the country. Today marks a week since teachers in Oakland went on strike, calling for better pay, smaller classroom sizes, more counselors and nurses for students, and a moratorium on new charter schools. We're joined by Teresa Harrington, a reporter covering education in Northern California for EdSource. Miles Murray is an English and creative writing teacher at Oakland High School. He's been teaching for 11 years. Alex Webster Guiney has been a special ed teacher with the Oakland Unified School District for 4 years. She teaches at Oakland High, and Miles and Alex are joining us from the picket line. And if you have a question or a comment, what do you think about all of these strikes that are happening across the country? We're expecting other districts across California to possibly go on strike in the near future. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We have an email from David. He says, if 24 schools are closed, that should mean 24 principals and maybe some vice principals get to either go back down the ladder to be counselors, teachers, or they simply get axed and the district wastes less money on non-teaching persons. As to keeping schools and buildings open, closed buildings don't accrue lighting and heating costs. So what actually happens, Teresa, when a school is closed? What happens to the staff?
Well, the teachers will get reassigned because they still have the same number of students. And so that it's not as big of an issue for the teachers. Plus, with the giant teacher turnover that they have every year anyway, they're not too worried about teachers losing their jobs, you know, involuntarily. It is true that principals and other administrators would potentially have to go back to teaching or go to another district or, you know, move up the ladder in administration. And then the other thing with the facilities is the district is starting what's called a 7-Eleven committee to look at surplus property and what they want to do with it. They could lease it. They could lease it to charter schools. They could sell it. That's one of the things that a bill that was passed called AB 1840 would allow them to sell property to help pay off their loan that they still owe to the state. A lot of people are actually calling for the state to forgive that loan, but I'm not sure if that will actually happen.
You also mentioned the district's restorative justice program, which teaches students leadership and conflict resolution skills. I mean, this is such an important program. It saw a 20% jump in graduation rates for those students last year, and foster youth case managers who provide specialized support to foster youth. Just tell us a little bit more about this program.
Okay, actually, the one with the 20% increase in graduation rates, that was the Asian Pacific Islander Student Achievement Program. So there are three things that I had mentioned in my story that I think you are referencing. But the Restorative Justice Program has gotten amazing support from the community, and there are two student board members. And one of the student board members has actually come forward with a proposal to the board in conjunction with one of the board members to basically, the board wanted to increase its surplus from the mandated 2% to 3%, so it would have a little cushion. And she is saying, why don't you use a little bit of that extra reserve money to save this restorative justice program, because she personally said it made such a big difference to her. And there have just been countless numbers of students coming forward and community members saying how if they didn't have that program, you'd have more people absent, you'd have more people dropping out, and so you would end up losing money by not having that program. Same thing with Asian Pacific Islanders. You know, the district is very well known for its African American Male Achievement Program, and it also recently started a female program that may actually get cut, and it started reaching out to Latinos. And then the Asian Pacific Islander community said, hey, what about us? And they started this program, and it was just really, really successful. And now they're cutting the program manager. That's one of the central office administrators I was talking about, who is on the ground actually working in the schools with these kids. And the district's philosophy is, well, the teachers can just take this on. And so, as you've heard, the teachers are already doing way more than they can handle. And to try to take on, you know, these specific programs without proper training, you know, is just really not feasible, a lot of people are saying.
Miles, can you talk about the importance of these programs and what they mean to your students and to teachers like yourself?
Well, I know that it's a real stopgap measure in the school-to-prison pipeline. Our kids, as you mentioned, are coming from really rough situations. They bring some of that trauma into the classroom, and often it gets them into trouble and right into those very well-funded prisons that you mentioned before. Here on my campus, I know Alex and I and many of our colleagues are trained in restorative justice techniques. We hold circles in our classrooms. We do some conflict resolutions, and also the students start to learn the techniques, and they lead some of the programs themselves. We had an on-site restorative justice coordinator last year. She was cut against all of our wishes, and that was sad to see her go. So, like you say, that's just another hat that the teachers are wearing now, and it's a very powerful hat. And I've seen kids have their lives turned around with some of the techniques and the communication skills taught in restorative justice.
Alex, what would you add?
So, the week before we went on strike, a bunch of my kids with IEPs are working on their senior project. The senior project is a capstone project that everybody has to complete before graduation. And these kids, of course, have a bunch of learning disabilities that are, you know, seriously impede their ability to, you know, stay on their timeline, make sure that their papers are turned in on time, all of these things. On top of that, they have to work together to finish a project for a client. The academy that I teach in is a visual arts academy, so they're working on this visual arts project for a client, and these kids were just not communicating. It was falling apart. One of my kids came to me in tears, saying, like, you know, we're fighting, we're doing all this, we're saying mean things to each other, we're not working together. And so I was able to say, hey, you know, do you want me to hold a circle for you guys so that you guys can communicate about this? And they said, yes. I'm tier 3 training for restorative justice. I've gone to several district trainings. So I felt comfortable being able to hold the circle on my own. I did the background work. I got the kids on board. We had a great circle. They were all able to express, you know, not just like, oh, this is the problem, but like, this is how it's impacting me and this is how I'm feeling about it. And we were able to come up with a plan for them to get past sort of these interpersonal conflicts. And I strongly feel that if I didn't have those skills, if I hadn't been trained within those skills, that these kids would still be struggling with this issue, and it would honestly endanger their graduation status.
Hmm.
So that's an example of how restorative justice like directly impacts graduation staff in OUSD.
And can you tell us more about IEP? Is that the Individualized Education Program?
That's correct. Each child with special needs, after they have been assessed by a psychologist and found that they have a learning disability of one kind or another, there are 13 different categories that they can qualify in. They receive an individualized education plan, which is based on a legal document that is signed by the IEP team and entitles them to services, essentially, within the school.
Alex Webster-Guiney has been a special ed teacher with the Oakland High School for 4 years. Miles Murray is an English and creative writing teacher at Oakland High School, and they are joining us from the picket line. We're also joined by Teresa Harrington, a reporter covering education in Northern California for EdSource. Let's hear from Mike in San Francisco. Hi, Mike. Mike's not there. Mike wanted just to know how military spending influences what is available for education. We've done shows just about how education is funded, federal versus state and local. Can you break that down for us, Teresa?
Yeah, it is a little bit complicated, but there is federal funding that is supposed to fund special education, and that's one of the issues in California and actually nationwide, that the federal government does not fund special education at the level it should. And so then individual districts have to use the money that's supposed to be for general education for special education. And that's one of the issues that's really hurting a lot of districts in California right now, along with the rising pension costs. The other thing that the federal government provides is called Title I money, which is for low-income schools. And so districts like Oakland do get a lot of Title I money, but you have to have a certain percentage of low-income students to get that. But that does help pay for extra services in those schools.
Well, thank you for that question. We have a comment from Jen who says, I work for CUSD in Sacramento, where we're in the middle of a legal battle with our superintendent who refuses to honor our agreed upon contract. Side note, I'm listening on my prep because I've been waiting 7 minutes now for my computer, which is probably 15 years old, to open the documents I need. Another question, Miles and Alex, what are your working conditions like? I mean, do you have the beyond what we're talking about here with bringing the food and the school supplies, being a counselor, I'm sure some people act as also taxi services for some kids. Just what about the basic needs that you have personally to get your job done at school? Miles?
Well, it's a little bit tricky of a question to answer just because I've been doing this so long. I have kind of a new normal. I'm used to taking work home and working unpaid overtime. I'm used to my book's falling apart. We're reading of Mice and Men, and a lot of the pages are coming out. And also, yeah, I got some mice in my room. But we keep it pretty simple. I just use my my whiteboard and some markers often, which I buy myself. So we keep it pretty simple in my classroom. I don't have a whole lot of needs. But going back to the trauma, and the lack of counselors, that's a major impact on the classroom dynamic. Kids are angry or stressed or traumatized from things that happen outside of school or sometimes in school, and the service is there to help them work through that and get them back to a place where they can be a productive member of a classroom are really not being funded. So I'd say although supplies is an issue, it's really more the emotional impact of the kids feeling undervalued by their, they know they're valued by the teachers, but they get it. They're savvy. They get that the schools are not funded, and they know where the blame lies, and that's downtown with the school board and the superintendent.
Right. Even when we're talking about something like Of Mice and Men, what message does it send to kids when the book is ripped?
It has a lot of good messages in that book, but as far as it falling apart, they're kind of rolling their eyes and being like, we're trying to read out loud together, and they say, oh, I need a new book. This page is missing. Okay, hand them yours. Share. You guys share. They know where the love is coming from, and that's from each other and from the teachers, but not from the administration. And we've got, actually, speaking of students, we've got quite a few kids out on our picket line with us, coming downtown to the different actions with us, which I'd love to talk about later, some of the focus actions that we've done on during each day of the strike. They've each been different. But the kids get it, and they, you know, they support us. We've only had about, well, today I think the count was about 35 kids come to school, and that's out of about just under 1,500 kids enrolled in our class. So with the support of their parents, they're honoring our picket line by staying home. And they know how much power they have and how much pressure they're putting on the district.
The Chronicle has an article today about, because, you know, parents who work two jobs or they don't have a set schedule, it's really hard for them to call and say, sorry, there's a strike happening. I can't come in today. So what's happening is parents are getting together, and if a parent has the morning off or the afternoon off, they're basically opening their home to have a mini school for these kids who need childcare.
Yeah, actually, I'm a parent of a child in OUSD. I have two kids, actually, but only one is old enough to go to school. And when I knew that the strike was coming down the pike, I organized essentially a solidarity school with some of our close friends in the neighborhood so that we could, you know, rotate houses among five or six different families. And so, you know, a couple days ago, my husband, who's a who works from home a lot, was able to host eight kids at our house for, you know, from 8 to 5 during the day, and there was just, you know, that's what people are doing. And as you know, as we walk down the street on our marches, we see families hanging out of the balconies and hanging out of the windows, and we have you know, all these families supporting us, and there's these gigantic solidarity schools that are being formed at churches, a ton of volunteers. People are really, really pulling together to make this happen, and I think overall the district has less than 6% attendance as far as their students right now.
Anything to add on that, Teresa?
Yes, and another really interesting thing is that the city itself is offering up its recreation centers and its libraries. The city council passed a resolution in support of the teachers. One of the city council members has called on the governor to forgive the loan. And so she's right. They're getting a lot of community support, and the marchers are going around saying Oakland is a union town, and all the other unions are joining in with them too. So you're seeing just widespread support here in Oakland.
Let's hear from another caller. Let's go to Ruthann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann. Welcome to the show. Ruthann, are you with us? Ruthann wanted to know, Alex, is the Individuals with Disabilities Act being enforced in Oakland? Do students with disabilities have equal access?
I don't know exactly what the stats are on that. I can say at Oakland High School, the kids are certainly not getting all of the services they're entitled to, which is not like the fault of our administration or of our teachers. It's just we simply don't have enough teachers. We don't have enough resources. We're not getting enough funding to be able to provide all of the needs that these students have. Our caseloads are too big. You know, we're trying to keep our caseloads capped for special day class, capped at 13. The district wants to raise that number to 15. You know, there's just not enough resources. We can't give them what they're entitled to. And frankly, I don't know if it's just that parents haven't gotten savvy to the fact that this, you know, these are some major lawsuits waiting to happen. I know in New York City, it was like an incredibly forceful push to make sure that the kids had the services that they were entitled to, because they had dealt with many, many lawsuits brought by parents about kids not being able to have equal access.
Well, thank you, Ruthann, and we'll write this one down and do a show so we can go more in depth on that. Let's hear next from Bill in San Jose. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi. Is this Teresa? Who is this?
You're calling into your call. We can all hear you.
Yeah, your call. Yeah, I just want to, you know, say that the teachers definitely have the right to have a much higher salaries than they're currently getting, and 12% is really small potatoes, really. And we should be thinking more about professional salaries, six-figure salaries for the teachers because of the important work that they do, rather than constantly going after, you know, small potatoes, 12%, and so on. I think, you know, I just want to support them on that. I also want to support them on the fact that they've come across with at least some idea of improving practice around reducing class size. I don't believe that that's really the solution, but at least they've come up with some solution for improving practice, which the district administration has failed to do. And I think until we begin to systematically look at the improvement of professional practices across the board and not just boutique programs like some of the programs that have been brought up by the teachers, we're going to continue to see poor academic performance. Last year, only 18% of 11th graders met standards on the math test, and only 10% of Hispanic students. And that's just not, I mean, that's a crisis in academic achievement that's occurring in Oakland Unified School District that we have to address through a system-wide improvement in professional practices, curriculum, and assessments. And until we begin to think of this as a system in which we're all working together to improve those fundamental areas, we're going to continue to see the poor academic performance, which really is the big picture.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling in, Bill. I mean, since we're talking about raising salaries and funding, Robert wrote in from Berkeley. Oakland's neighbor Berkeley has excellent schools only because the voters have voted for special school taxes, so that the property tax in Berkeley is nearly double what it is in Oakland. If Oakland wants more money for schools, the voters there could also vote to raise their property taxes. Do you know about that, Teresa?
Oh, well, there are certain bonds and parcel taxes that districts can float, and the district already does have a parcel tax, and they have, I think, at least one bond measure that the public is already funding. But it is true that now that with the gentrification in Oakland, they might be able to pass a parcel tax. There's a higher threshold for a parcel tax. You need 2/3 voter support for that, whereas for a bond measure, which funds facilities, you only need 51%. The district is talking about going out for another bond measure in 2020. They have a parcel tax that helps fund libraries, but not enough, obviously. Mm-hmm. So they haven't talked about another parcel tax that I've heard yet, but that is certainly something they could consider.
And then voters in California will also get the chance to partially undo Proposition 13, which limits growth in property taxes. This would not focus on individual housing. This would focus on commercial buildings, right?
Right.
And according to reports, the California Teachers Association is already behind this. A number of groups are trying to get in on this early to educate the public about it.
Yes, there does seem to be widespread support for that. The question is, would the portion of that that comes to schools be enough? Because I've heard it would only be $4 billion, which sounds like a lot, but when you're talking about a whole state of 6.3 million kids, it doesn't go very far.
Now that California has a new governor, Gavin Newsom, and a supermajority, right, in Sacramento? Do the Dems still have a supermajority?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Democrats have a supermajority. What are you hearing from politicians in Sacramento about this crisis?
Well, they are actually moving on some charter school bills, interestingly, right after the L.A. Strike happened. And also, they are looking at different funding. As you said, I forget what that's called, the funding for education proposition that's gaining a lot of steam. And there are other just calls for more funding. The governor actually, in his proposed budget for next year, included more funding for pensions. As I mentioned before, rising pension costs is a huge issue. And so that's some relief that a lot of districts are asking for. And then, as I already mentioned, special education. So those are the things that are on everybody's radar right now. And the question is, what will they do about it?
What are these charter bills exactly?
One would allow districts to take into consideration fiscal impact. And this was by Assemblyman Rob Bonta, who is an Oakland representative, and that's been a big thorn in the sides of districts because they all say that there is a financial impact when a charter opens because they take students away from their district in general. And so if that passes, that would have a huge that would make a huge difference in how districts are able to approve charters.
I want to do an entire show on charters, but we have an online comment from Steve who says, I've seen a trend around the country to promote charters and incentives offered for families to send kids to private schools. I feel this leaves a pool of the most vulnerable special needs and marginalized students in public schools. And we know that Netflix CEO Reed Hastings gave $9 million last year to the Independent Expenditure Committee of EdVoice, which is backing pro-charters. Walmart, the Broad Foundation, a lot of wealthy foundations and people give money to charters.
Yeah, charters actually are public schools, though, so they're not private, but they are operated by nonprofits oftentimes, and they don't have the same transparency regulations, and that's what another bill would do. It would make them have the same accountability measures in terms of transparency for their board meetings and things like that that public schools have. And there is definitely debate about this. They don't, in general, tend to enroll as many special education students, certainly. They don't have the ability to do that. And so one of the things that Oakland is trying to do is to say, okay, if the charters have special ed kids, they want them to use the Oakland special education program, which is called a SELPA. And so at least Oakland would have a hand in educating those students and would actually help the charters a little bit with educating those students. And in terms of the other students, they actually can't really discriminate against other students. I mean, they can't really discriminate against special needs students either, but they have a lottery system. And so really, they're supposed to take any kid who qualifies in terms of their requirements.
We're almost out of time, but Miles, why are you all calling for a moratorium on new charter schools?
Another thing that's missing from charters, almost all of them don't have unions. So it's really part of a full frontal billionaire agenda to break down the public school system. If the teachers there don't have the protections that we have, don't have the backup that we have of our association, and I would direct people to the OEA, Oakland Educational Association, website for updates on budgets, on the negotiations, on the us winning the strike any day now, and further actions. Charters are, like I said at the beginning of the show, we're losing $57 million a year to charters. And while your other guest is correct, they can't on paper say, oh, we'll only take this certain type of student. They have workarounds, and they kind of say, yeah, sure, you're welcome here, but then they, what do you know, then they push them back out the back gate for various reasons. There are all kinds of sort of nefarious techniques. So if you look at the percentage of high-needs kids in those schools, those charter schools compared to the traditional public schools, there's a big gap. Mm. And yet that one call-in comment is true. They are the kids with higher needs are getting stranded at our schools, while the funding is getting drained out and going to the charter schools.
Well, we will definitely do a show about charter schools in the near future. We will also continue to cover and follow the strike in Oakland, and we'll let you know what happens once an agreement is made. Miles Murray is an English and creative writing teacher at Oakland High School. Alex Webster Guiney has been a special ed teacher with Oakland High for 4 years. They both joined us from the picket line. Miles and Alex, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Talk to you after we win.
Thank you. Teresa Harrington is a reporter covering education in Northern California for EdSource. Teresa, thanks for your reporting and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.